Tonight on Arena, we rediscover Jack Rooney, the musical that never was, and Brendan De Galley on his new work with Eru on Gola Island. Bafusha is a visual arts exhibition which is part of a greater project called Hereditas. It's a collaboration exploring traveller culture and social history for Corja Arts Festival in Sligo. The exhibition brings together the work of seven contemporary Irish artists who share heritage with the Irish traveller community. It will be premiered at the Corja Sligo Arts Festival, which runs from the 6th to the 13th of July. And I'm joined by the curator of the exhibition, Seamus Nolan, and award-winning visual artist, Leanne McDonough, who is from the travelling community. So Seamus, it's an exhibition from a group of artists related to the travelling community, but it also is in conversation with another exhibition.
That's right, yeah. Bafusha is it's an annex to the Wandering Gaze. I'm not going to try and pronounce the Cant Gammon name, but it's an exhibition of Yeats's work that deals with traveller images. Throughout his career, he documented travellers and they were incorporated through his work. So the Wandering Gaze, we worked with Owen de Bardoon and the group through the Sligo Traveller Support Group to look at Yeats's work with a group of from the travelling community and to examine those works, to interpret them and to somehow respond to them. So alongside that, alongside the works that speak about travellers from Yeats's perspective, we have travellers, contemporary travellers, who are making art today and dealing with what turned the same issues, the same themes that Yeats was documenting at the time.
Okay, so we have one image here that we're going to tweet. This is one of the Yeats images from his collection of work he did, observing travellers and painting them. And this is in Capel Street.
That's right.
So could you describe it for us?
Well, in Capel Street is it's a young traveller woman. She's nursing a baby and she has a basket of flowers, paper flowers at her side. So, it's a beautiful image. The colours are really, really strong. And when we showed it to the group, the response was really interesting, just in terms of paper flowers for wanting and the colours that have different associations for.
And Leanne, you were in that group. What were your views of In Capel Street?
So I wasn't necessarily in that group, but the piece of work that has been chosen to speak back to it is one of my pieces called Rest, which is a similar theme, I think. So the piece that I captured is of an image of a lady who has also taken that moment's rest throughout her daily activities, where she would have spent a day caring for kids. So they're speaking to each other in that sense.
Okay, so we can tweet that piece as well, which is Rest. So could you describe that as Seamus described there? The Yeats piece is very representational. It's a woman sitting on the side of the street with this basket of flowers. Yours is more obscure in the sense that it's a figurative piece, but it's almost like it's in action or somebody is moving on. You describe it maybe.
Well, this is correct, but I guess that visual leads more towards my own personal style as to how I would choose to represent either a subject or a person within the context of my art. I see how they speak to each other, and I would have loved to have perhaps been part of that group, which unfortunately I wasn't, to hear those unusual perspectives. But I guess it's a representation of a woman who I know would work extremely hard and spend all her days doing everything possible for her kids. And it would only be towards the end of the day where this woman would have time for a moment's rest. So I think I like how they interact with each other in that way.
Mm-hmm. And Leanne, when you started making your own images, you were very aware of the kind of images other people, not only Yeats, but photographers, journalists, photojournalists, took of the travelling community. And what were your views on that?
Yeah, so I guess in the early days when I was kind of researching my own community and having a look at what was already out there. I did take a good look at Yeats's work and maybe Nana Reid, Gerard Dillon, Louis Labrocki and so on. And I think back in the time of those artists, we had a certain amount of kind of intrigue, interest that felt for me, in my opinion, more authentic and genuine in comparison to maybe some of the representations of today or later years. And what I mean by that is I've seen lots of work produced about the community from an outside perspective that isn't necessarily as authentic as I think it could be. But I do believe that Yeats did that in a way that was more genuine and authentic.
And the more contemporary images you're talking about there and are critical of, is that because you think they're intrusive, or is it the kind of story they're trying to tell that they have a journalistic or an editorial line on it?
Yeah, not maybe so much intrusive, but I suppose a very stereotypical representation, which I think is too narrow to try and represent an entire community, because there's immense diversity within our community. So I just think in comparison to the really early artists of our time, it's not been done in such a successful way as to the way in which Yeats might have done it or Labrocki might have done it.
Because I suppose they were trying just to show people representations of what they saw.
Yeah, well,
without a judgment or without an editorial line on it.
Possibly, yeah. Well, I believe Yeats would have created the work in a time when people were really thinking about Irish identity and belonging as a whole concept. And I guess he was looking at the traveller community, but travellers in general, as a more true representation of Irishness. And he kind of looked at travellers and nomadism in a way, I guess, as authentic Irish, or as a notion of freedom, as opposed to something that was more settled and untainted by British rule. So I feel that he was being almost nostalgic for the Irish that had gone.
So tell us a little bit about how you create that image then. You do, it's photography, but then there is printing or silkscreen printing involved?
Sometimes, yes. But in the particular piece, Rest, it's just true photography. So it's just a true photograph that has been taken with a slow shutter speed, and that's it.
And that gives it that kind of fleeting sense of movement.
Exactly, yeah.
All right. Okay. And was that a difficult thing to come across as your signature?
I guess in the early days it was something I initially was just playing around with. When working through a process, I like to experiment and explore as much as possible. So when I had done the task of taking your straight on in focus documentary style or portrait style photography, I had enough of that, then I wanted to kind of begin playing with it. So I began to break the rules essentially and push boundaries. And I really liked this visual that I was attaining. And the reason being was because with the blurry, hazy image, it allowed for people to ask more questions and really kind of get into the piece and be that bit more inquisitive about, well, what's actually happening here? What's going on? What is the concept? What's the topic? And I really liked that, because I like when people come to either me or to other members of the community and are genuinely inquisitive about, well, who are you and where do you come from and what are you about? And I welcome that. So if I can create an image that does that, well, then I'm satisfied with that.
And Seamus, were you excited by how the, as well as Leanne, the other artists responded to the work of Yeats?
The community groups that we worked with they're not the artists, they're the group True Sligo Traveller Support Group. So the artists were invited after this. So it's not a direct response to Yeats's work. It's I suppose it's set up because the contemporary traveller artists who are making work are sitting opposite the works that Yeats has made. And it's, I suppose, to use the term platform, I mean, it is a platform where travellers' voices are being presented, and that's been kind of a focus of the Hereditas project, has been to work with artists and traveller groups and communities. And initially, the project was around setting up situations to contest kind of narratives. But through working with the groups, what was kind of required was actually places for traveler voices to present their own narratives, as opposed to, you know, in opposition to grand narratives or whatever. And the artist's work is being produced, and it's an exhibition, it's a group exhibition. So it's not necessarily in response to the works, but it sits alongside them.
Right, and could you describe some of the other work in it?
Yeah, we have an artist, Fionn O'Fionn, who's a conceptual artist based in the UK. And Fionn is working around issues of homelessness and homeless deaths. And his work is multimedia, and he's over for the week installing the work and producing it. Tom Radigan, his work is very much around narrating the trauma of being removed from his family as a young traveller and placed in institutional care. And so he narrates that experience through his work. Chloe McDonough, she's a young graphic designer, and she's made a piece of work that based on her own father's experience of the transition from nomadism to settled accommodation. So she produced a stamp, and it was purchased by the National Museum and was due to be printed by En Poste, but we're not sure what's happening with that at the moment. Dave McDonough then is a photographer and video maker, and his work is very striking images. And the work that he has in it is a portrait of Stephen Casey Bracken, who is a traveller man, who's a trained actor. And it's this really striking image of Stephen. And it stands in contrast to the kind of images that Yeats produced of the lone male and the lone traveller. And I suppose the legacies of troubled kind of history and how that's manifest in a lot of young males in the community. And then finally, there's Francesca Hutchinson, whose work is around textiles and her own familial heritage and the crafts she's kind of learned and she works with in her art through her traveller identity.
We'll tweet another one of your works. This is called Confined Conditions. Will you tell us about that, Leanne?
Yeah, this piece I produced a number of years ago. It was formed as part of a bigger body of work titled Accommodate versus Assimilate. And I think I've said previously, sometimes when I'm creating a new body of work, it sometimes takes an event or a person or a statement to kind of kick that into action. And I produced this body of work very shortly after the tragedy of Carrick Mines here in Dublin. And I remember when
that was the terrible fire in the halting site in Carrick Mines.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. I remember this great outpouring of sympathy from the whole island. And I thought that, you know, that was amazing or whatever. But then I remember very shortly after that, when those families went home to be buried, I think it was County Wexford, one or two of those members went home to be buried. I remember there being a bit of dialogue on social media where the town kind of shut down a little bit and shops closed, hotels closed, B&Bs closed, restaurants closed, there was no space for parking and so on. And it reminded me of something that happened in my own lifetime when my own grandmother passed. And it took that, I suppose, to kick this body of work into action. So what I did after that was I was adamant I was going to create a body of work that was going to give space for dialogue and debate in and around traveller accommodation here in Ireland. And I remember
your experience of your grandmother's funeral.
Something very similar happened to me in that I lived 2 hours away from my grandmother, and we'd visit her every Sunday. So we'd drive 2 hours to and from where she lived. But when she died and her funeral was happening, I went to the local restaurant because I was nearer that, and I asked to use the bathroom, and I was told I didn't have one. And I said, well, that's really strange because I visit here every Sunday and I use this service fairly often, and I know that you have a bathroom. And they said, it's not open, it's out of service today. I went, okay, fair enough. And I literally walked across the road to another restaurant to be told a very similar situation. And it left a sour taste in my mouth, to be honest. And that was in excess of maybe 20 years ago. But Carrick Mines only happened very, very recently. And it just kind of showed me, you know what, attitudes don't change overnight, unfortunately. And regardless of how good people can appear to be on national TV or in social media, when it comes down to it, actually, how nice are people? So it was just something that kind of annoyed me enough to create an entire body of work about. So the piece itself, Confined Conditions, is one of many of a bigger body of work. And each piece makes commentary in relation to different things that has happened in the last maybe 5 to 10 years in and around accommodation within wider society here in Ireland.
Now, you are working almost full time as an artist in that you are teaching. You're also involved in a public art project as well as the project here with Gorgeous Sligo. How did your career develop, Leanne?
I guess when I decided to go to college, it was something I had never really thought about until I was in the Leaving Cert. And a teacher had said to me one day, you have potential here, please don't waste it. And I was only up until that point, I kind of went, okay. She kind of made me stop and think about it, because art was something I had always loved and enjoyed. And I remember as a child always being good with my hands and making things. And I just thought, you know what? What's to lose if I went to college and tried this out? And I remember going to college and absolutely loving it. And it just went from there. And then after I finished a fine art degree, I decided to maybe do the HDIP and become a teacher because of one experience I had with a school. And I really enjoyed it. I went in, I was working with a group of traveller girls, and I really enjoyed the experience. And I thought, you know what, I could do more of that. So then I worked as a teacher for a number of years, but my own practice had come to a halt until I got an opportunity in 2014, I think it was, and I worked with Nora Casey, former Dragon's Den. And she gave me an opportunity which resulted in my first solo show. And I remember when I had that, I felt so proud on the night that I had achieved what I had achieved in such a short space of time. I decided it was something I needed to replicate. And ever since then, it's just been growing and growing and growing.
And then you've got this public art commission. This is one of the Present for Art projects. Tell me about that. What was your pitch and where is it? Is it something outside like we think of as public art, or I know public art has got more sophisticated now?
Yeah, unfortunately it hasn't materialised yet, so it is still in the process of materialising, but it is a piece of work that I think will be really exciting once it is once it has been completed. It's a piece of work which ultimately will be a celebration of the granting of the ethnic status. And in and around the time that happened, I had, I think it was 10 families, had their DNA analysed by the Royal College of Surgeons here in Dublin. And the visual data obtained from that DNA analysis, I've turned into a sculpture ultimately. And if I could describe it very briefly and quickly, symbolically, it will look like a wagon wheel. But it will contain the visual data that is represented in the report and the findings that we found, which will be really interesting once it's.
And is this, I know you live in Cork, is this a Cork County Council commission?
Yes.
So where would it be?
It's going to be in the inner city in Cork, so it'll be in the north side of the city, next to a school that I would work really closely with as well. So it'll be fairly close to Terence McSweeney's school in the north side of the city.
So you must be an inspiration to other young travellers that you meet in either workshops or in schools in relation to going to college and having a career as an artist, which is, you know, so hard for so many people.
Possibly. I guess in addition to working as an artist, I also work as the Traveller Education Coordinator with Munster Technological University. So it is my job to work with kids in second level and to encourage them to make the transition into either FE or HE.
So Seamus, what were, are you hoping that will come out of this exhibition? I mean, obviously you want people to come and see the wonderful work and see the traveller experience from a different point of view.
I suppose I've been making visual art projects for a number of years and working with traveller groups, and I really think there's artists and arts organisations, sorry, need to support artists, traveller artists who are making work. So a lot of people, I think, are hesitant about how to work with traveller communities because of the difficulties that have throughout the years. And so it's, I think we need to open that door, and we need to make spaces where traveller voices are placed central to it. And it's not, I'm not framing this exhibition. These are the works that the traveller artists are producing themselves. And they're not just about traveller issues. They're works that contemporary artists are engaging with, who happen to come from traveller backgrounds. But I just really think it's important that we make spaces for those things to happen. And I just want to say Carja Arts Festival have been so supportive and committed to that over the long term. So, I think it's an example of how working with traveller artists and with traveller communities, you can create really interesting work. And
yes, because there is that idea that you might be pigeonholed into, let's have an exhibition about travellers and travellers' lives, rather than saying these are traveller artists with all these myriad of interests and ways of representing their lives and the lives of what they observe.
It's true. And the thing, I guess, about Seamus is we've known each other now for 10 years or more?
It's a few years, yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while. When Seamus invited me to participate, I knew almost immediately I was in good hands, and that I trusted him to the extent that I knew my work was in safe hands. But what I mean by that was it wasn't such a selection process, but more a conversation between us about what could we do here. And that's what I really liked. And I think I agree. When we talk about creating these spaces to allow these exhibitions to happen, that's exactly what we need. We need full-on true collaboration, as opposed to somebody coming in and say, this is what we've got. Absolutely. And this is what we want to do. And I've had that in the past. And I've sat on calls where people have said, oh, you're great, you're amazing, we want you, and this is what we want you to do. And I'd say, thank you, but no thank you, and I'm gone off that call as quick as I'm on it. But that wasn't the case with Seamus. So I think if we're to continue to create work in this way, and for museums and organisations and festivals to lead out as a model of best practice, they should watch this space.
It doesn't always take 10 years, but it does. Yeah. It does take sustained engagement and support. And
Well, Bafusha will run from the 6th of July to the 28th of September in the model. And the Wandering Gaze will run from the 6th of July to the 28th of September at the model, in partnership with the Carja Arts Festival as part of the Hereditas cultural project funded by the Arts Council Art 2023 Centenary Programme. Seamus Nolan and Leanne McDonough, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Almost 30 years ago, the Dublin singer-songwriter Philip Chevron of The Pogues and The Radiators asked the journalist Declan Lynch to help him realise a creative project he had been working on, a musical based on a fictional Irish-American boxer called Jack Rooney. The songs were lost for many years, but with the digital album release, we can now enjoy these previously unheard treasures sung by Philip Chevron himself. I'm delighted to be joined by his collaborator, Declan Lynch. Declan, you're very welcome. The album is called... Hi, how are you? The album is called The Turner, a very specific word when it comes to this project. What exactly
is it?
The tuner. What is the tuner?
Well, it's what a musical is called in a magazine like Variety. You know, Variety have their own language, which... Philip loved all that sort of American slang that they use, and routinely they don't refer to musicals; they refer to a tuner. right? So as a huge lover of musicals and musical theatre and theatre in general, Phil just automatically called this project that he was working on and that we were both working on, a tuner. And after a while, we just called it nothing else. I mean, it just seemed perfectly normal. We almost forgot the word musical, you know. So so that's where it comes from. And it's simply a thing with tunes in it, you know.
Oh, right. And he did liked work for, like, Brecht and Weill. And he had worked with Agnes Burnell, who had been a great singer of those kind of European songs, a chanteuse, as it was, back in the, I guess, 70s, was it? 70s and 80s?
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of us in Dublin found out about Brecht and Weill almost from Philip and Agnes Burnell. You know, I remember they did a few nights in the Project Arts Centre, you know, many moons ago. And it was just like, it really introduced that music to a lot of us. And of course, on the Radiators, that Ghost Town album, the classic album, there's Kitty Ricketts, written by Philip, which is almost like a musical in itself, you know? I mean, that really gave notice of how deeply kind of imbued and how knowledgeable he was and what a feel he had for that whole world, you know? So he always had that shot in his locker as such, you know? And people were aware of it, but maybe not as much as it actually was. I mean, like, it was his life almost, the theatre, rather than rock and roll. I would say they were, you know, perhaps equally important to him, but ultimately, you know, that's really where his heart was, I think, you know.
Let's have a listen to one of the tracks so we can get an idea of what it sounded like. This is Red Letter Day.
Today I catch up with my dreams. It's a red letter day. There's a parade in my
That's Red Letter Day from The Tuner, the musical Jack Rooney created by Philip Chevron and Declan Lynch. So Declan, it's very Guys and Dolls. You could imagine it being on Broadway in the 1930s or 40s, couldn't you?
Yeah, well, you see, the real inspiration, I think, for Phil was George M. Cohan. This legendary figure called George M. Cohan, who, also known as the man who owned Broadway, a person that there's a statue of him on Broadway. This guy was of Irish extraction, and very few people seem to be either aware of it or have registered it at all, right? His original name of the family name was Cohan, K-E-O-H-A-N-E. He was originally from County Cork, and he calls himself Cohan in as a vaudevillian, and as a result, I think people may have assumed he was Jewish, and just forgot about all the other aspects of his background. He eventually was played by James Cagney in the film Yankee Doodle Dandy, and I think Phil was just fascinated by this idea. I mean, we're so proud of Irish people who do well in everything, in entertainment and all that, and here's this guy who contributed so much to the American musical theatre, to the whole world of American theatre, and he's essentially Irish and almost unacknowledged. And that was a real kind of driving force, I think, for Phil. He wanted to, I think he had this sound in his head that what an Irish-American sound should be. Do you know what I mean? That
yes.
It isn't necessarily traditional music as we know it. That this other thing had happened where this other, if you like, you know, the translation of Irish culture into American culture had happened and was almost unnoticed in a strange kind of a way. It, as a direct influence, that there was. I remember Phil would say that he one night in New York he ran into Matt Dillon, the actor.
And, yes, a Rumblefish, wasn't it? And the Outsiders,
And of course, he was in the Pogues. It was probably around the time that they were doing the Pogues video for Fairy Tale of New York, he discovered, like, Matt was also very into musicals, and Matt regaled him with a version of a song from Guys and Dolls. I've got the horse right here. His name is Paul Revere. And this epiphany, I think, gave Phil the idea that, well, first of all, it gave the idea that Matt would be a great guy to have as the lead man in this tuner, you know. And he developed from this idea of a boxer, which again is a great Irish-American tradition, and so forth. And from those kind of just beginnings, he then set to work writing songs. He asked me at a certain point to join in with him. I think
How did that come about? Were ye friends for a long time, Declan?
We were, yeah. No, we'd been friends for years, since, weirdly enough, a Battle of the Bands competition in Tremore back in, I think, 1981 or something. I was representing Hot Press magazine and Philip was representing Mulligan Records and representing ourselves in some shape or form. And the thing lasted a week, which is, I mean, Battles of the Bands seemed to have an epic grandeur at the time. And we did a great deal of socialising that week, and we just hit it off, mm-hmm. you know what I mean, mm-hmm. and got on very well. And then, you know, when Phil was working on this musical, we just met up, and he because I was writing about sport in Hot Press, I wrote a sports column on the back page, and I think he kind of liked the way I wrote about sport, or thought that because he was thinking of a boxing musical, he felt he himself came late to sport, right? He wasn't really into it when he was growing up or anything, but at a certain point he fell in love with Nottingham Forest, and this became such a thing with him. He actually moved to Nottingham. He lived in Nottingham, and this is where
That's a lot of the work
on this. Yeah, absolutely. He really kind of he was a late developer, but absolutely all in once he got there. And so that aspect, I suppose, that I could bring to it, and we were both very interested in the whole cultural aspects of it as well, and we just got on well. So it was we set off on this journey, if you like, and little knowing how long it would take and where it would end, but with the sort of underlying sense always that there's an inherent lunacy in all of these things, right? I mean, musicals are innately mad, and the essential madness of them being, I suppose, that everybody involved from the beginning knows that there is almost no chance whatsoever of them ever happening.
Yes,
right.
Yes, of course.
But you sort of keep going with it anyway, simply because they're such vast undertakings. They're so collaborative. There's so much kind of money needed, all those sorts of things, that they're almost impossible to do. And
yeah.
We see so many examples of it even to the present day.
Now, Declan, we may not. So the musical didn't get made, but what you have is this lovely downloads called The Tuner.
Yeah.
But I also have been lucky enough to get this gorgeous CD version, which also has additional tracks. And one of the tracks is Manhattan Moon. And this has got Kirsty MacColl on doing the vocals. So let's have a listen to that.
And there stood Liberty in silhouetted skies. And from that moment on, I knew that I'd embrace each opportunity to be a part of this place. 5 points and then Hell's Kitchen, all stops in between. Somewhere to find a niche in for this King Colleen. Didn't stop me yearning now and then for my own.
Kirsty MacColl there singing Manhattan Moon from The Tuner by Philip Chevron, from the album which has these wonderful additional tracks with Ronnie Drew and Kirsty MacColl. So today, some 30 years on, Declan, are you delighted, Declan Lynch, are you delighted that this has got a lease of life, even if it hasn't made the stage?
Yeah, well, it was actually Pete Holliday and Steve Averill, who are, you know, Philip's original friends and colleagues in The Radiators, and Deborah, who's Phil's sister, over time thought that it should be done. I mean, that the material should be gathered together somewhere in one place, because a lot of it is so good, and we just felt Phil would have wanted something like that, you know. And Pete came to me and we talked about it. And, you know, there are obvious aspects. It is a work in progress, you know what I mean? To some mm-hmm. extent, these were like demos as such. So they weren't like finished articles. But and Phil was very much a kind of perfectionist. But we felt, look, this stuff is there. It needs to be out there. Even for the fact of having Kirsty and Ronnie and those people on it, it's fascinating and valuable.
Indeed
in itself.
It is. And you do know? Really get... You do really get the narrative of it. So, Declan Nench, thank you so much. The Tuner is on digital release and a limited edition CD release. That's Philip Chevron's The Tuner. Declan Nench, thank you. You're listening to Tuesday Night's Arena. Leave No Trace or Fog the Lorag, Na Fog Lorag. From dancer, choreographer and lecturer Brandon De Galley will be showcased at the upcoming Errigal Arts Festival in Donegal. Brandon is a Donegal native who has a celebrated career that includes a 7-year stint as the principal dancer in Riverdance. This unique dance piece set against the backdrop of Gola Island in Donegal explores themes of bereavement and loss inspired by Brandon's personal experiences. Featuring students and tutors from his course at the University of Limerick and complemented by the music of David Downes, Leave No Trace promises to be an immersive and reflective journey. I'm delighted to be joined now by Brandon De Galley from our Limerick studio to tell us more about this site-specific performance. Brandon, could you tell us about the inspiration for Leave No Trace? As I said there, it was brought about or brought around by you're experiencing your own personal loss.
Yeah, I feel it's a several projects coming together or merging. We regularly have a residency as part of the Errigal Arts Festival in July with my youth company, Na Mic Agaire. And you can see them Na Mic Agaire from Gweedore and from Gola Island. And last year we just did our residency out on the island. A couple of years before that, during COVID, we did a piece in Ilanhari, Tory. Because of COVID, it had to be outside. But also, I was meant to do a piece called Deckland, named after Declan English, my partner, mm-hmm. At the Errigal Arts Festival. And the funding hasn't really come through yet, so we're still working on that. So I thought I would do an exploration and create a piece that might in some way be part of that, but also speaks to all the other initiatives that are happening.
Tell us about you're from Donegal, you're from very near Gola, you're from Gweedore, that's just an island nearby, Gola's just nearby.
That's right, I grew up in Gweedore, went to school there. Gola is just this beautiful island. We were fortunate enough to get a plot, myself and my siblings, so we built a small house there, so it's somewhere quite magical and it's a great place to go and reflect and think about things, especially, I find it very inspirational when it comes to making my art.
Now, how do you go about making this piece? It's going to be performed on the beach at Gola, like outside. So how do you work with the dancers to make a piece, given the wonderful setting?
Yes, there's a lot of unknowns. And I think what I do is I bury my head in the sand and hope that things go well in terms of weather. But I see it as kind of something that we build throughout the week. So even though I have a lot of ideas, I don't have the full thing framed in my head yet, but I do see it as having elements of visual art, music, movement, voice, and myself and David David's working on the music. We're in discussions about that. Because they're my students of the BA in Irish Dance and the MA of Irish Traditional Dance Performance, we'll be doing a lot of reflecting and reflexivity. We'll probably spend a lot of time just exploring all the possibilities and then little by little building the piece. So in my head, I think I see it, but it's not ready yet. That is part of what we do. It's about kind of letting the process, letting the idea, make itself, and just we're the vessels. But I would include, you know, everything from, I don't know, building structures from what we find about the place, making beautiful visual pieces with seaweed stones, building cairns, any sort of sculptures, but also emerging maybe from the water, and then creating a dance piece that might include both our bodies and our voices.
Now, you mentioned David Downes, and there we're going to play Fuishev now, which is one of the tracks from the piece. But there's Shannos in this. Tell us how that music came about.
Well, the when we sat down and talked about the ensemble that might be included, I really wanted, and David as well, it to be, I suppose, cross-genre. So, like, David is working with classical pianists and pipers, but Dominic McGillivray is somebody I've worked with quite a bit. He's a friend and a local, and has just an incredible voice and an amazing ability. I did a piece with him for the 50th anniversary in the University of Limerick, where we took a Vivaldi aria, translated it into Irish, and he sang it with the string ensemble, the classical ensemble in the university. So I, you know, there's so much. I just feel like there's nothing. The sky's the limit. And Dominic was generous enough to contribute to this part of the project anyway.
Well, let's listen to Fuishev now. Fuishev there from Fog the Lorog, no Fog Lorog, leave no trace. I'm on the beach in Gola. That's a wonderful piece, isn't it? It's so evocative.
And it's very, I suppose, quite upsetting as well to really hear it in this context, because I've been working with it, but when you hear it and you know it's going out over the airwaves, because both myself and David have had very tragic losses. Our partners died very suddenly, and it's a, you know, it's a difficult process, but it's also quite cathartic, and I think it's important to do.
Yes, there is very much that feeling of remorse in it, isn't there?
Absolutely. And I suppose that's the instrumentation, the way David created the melody, how Dominic sings it. I think it really speaks to my experience for sure.
Right. And I suppose then being on a beach near water, there is something about, I don't know, moving on, moving from one kind of source of ethereal thing to land.
Absolutely. And also the fact that what we're doing on the beach is ephemeral, and whether it's what we build or we create there, or our movement or the performance, and that is only there for a short amount of time, which is, I suppose, is how now that I know I experience life.
Right. Yes. That in itself is an evocation of how you feel and how you believe life is. Why wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And you know, you, these things make you think very, very deeply about the nature of reality and, you know, what it's all about. And everybody experiences this at some stage. And I think that work like this might be, you know, quite heavy or maybe quite, you know, sad. But, you know, I think it's important to address it.
And you are now teaching in Limerick. That's why I'm talking to you from Limerick, not from Donegal, because you're going to be going there for the Errigal Festival. And you went back to work. It's that idea of movement and keeping moving. You now have a 9-to-5 job. Is that to occupy yourself, to push yourself through that grief?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I do to kind of, I suppose, deal with things is to get busy. But the problem is sometimes that, you know, the business turns into a whole other thing. Stressful, very long days. I've been involved in too many things. But it is something that's very rewarding, because it kind of it satisfies a lot of what I like to do. I like to think about what I'm doing. I like to work as an artist, and I like to work with young people. And I do work with incredible young students that I know have brilliant artistic careers ahead of them. And one of the things that for Deck Land in that project is Ilachracht, the pilgrimage, because one of the things that I did do is keep moving forward. Even physically moving forward was a way of kind of believing that there was something out in the future for you after such a sad event.
Wait, tell me about the pilgrimage.
Well, pilgrimage is just the concept of the pilgrimage. So, like, I suppose after we buried Declan, I just felt myself moving, either going to Donegal or going places.
Yes.
So the actual act of physically moving forward was a way of, I suppose, psychologically believing that there was a future.
Yes, yes. And you'll be bringing up those students of yours now. That's a very innovative way of getting around not getting funding.
Absolutely. But it's also a great way to get them started. Some of them are in third year, so they're about to go into fourth year. And it means it's a big year for them for their final performance. So it's a way of kickstarting what that process is going to be and what they're going to say. Because I'm a big believer in, I love the tradition, I love kind of the wealth that's there, but I also want them to find their own voices within that tradition.
Are they in awe of you because you were in Riverdance, or do they think?
I'm so old and so long gone from it, they don't realise I was in it. That's the problem.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they have a kind of, they whisper at the back of the class saying, do you know he was the lead in Riverdance?
I'm sure they're whispering something, but not that.
Well, Brendan, it's sounds wonderful. It's Fog the Lorag na Fog Lorag. It'll be on Gola Island off the coast of Gweedore in County Donegal. It will be on Saturday the 27th of July as part of this year's Errigal Arts Festival. And more details from eaf.ie. Brendan, thank you so much. That's it for tonight's show. The programme was researched by Liam Murphy and Paula Shields. Kieran Cullen is on sound. Ali Hamilton is the broadcast coordinator. Tonight's show was produced by Reg Luby, and John Creedon is next after the news at 8.